Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really excited to have with me once again Chris Taylor. I'm excited because Chris is heading up one of the most exciting exploration stories that I've covered in my 38 years of writing my newsletter. Great Bear Resources is just really doing extremely well. And so we're really glad to have Chris with us. Thanks for joining me again, Chris.
Very nice to speak with you again, Jay.
It's really good to have you here. I should tell our listeners that I saw your stock was up almost a little more than 5% a few minutes ago anyway before we came. 46.3 million shares, I believe, is the number. Fully diluted, 53.8 million. You have nearly $31 million around that in the till. Stock selling well north of $6 in U.S. money, giving it a market cap of close to $300 million in U.S. money. I'd like you to talk a little bit about the press release, the news that you just put out yesterday on Monday along the LP Fault, which is where most of your efforts are these days on your Dixie project. Can you talk about the press release this past Monday, maybe talk about the results and what that means for that part of your exploration program?
Sure. Thanks, Jay. Effectively, the Dixie Project, which is 100% owned by Great Bear, it hosts one of the biggest gold discoveries in Canada for many years. That's the view that's emerging as we begin to drill more holes and we collect more data and the company continues to grow and the share price has been appreciating. The reason for that is because it looks like this LP fault zone that we're drilling off is one of the biggest ones in recent memory. And it puts it in a side-by-side comparison to there are other big deposits like this in Canada, and Canada is one of the leading gold producers in the world. But when you look at it, the big deposits and the companies that own them are much larger than Great Bear. The guys that have comparable gold endowment and comparable sort of zones to what we're looking at along LP. So that's really the driving reason for the success. And the numbers that we put out yesterday were reinforcing this because given the scale, this 4-kilometer so far extent that we've drilled along a big 18-kilometer long target, and it's hard to kind of get your head around that just for the raw scale, but every drill hole along the first 4 kilometers that we've drilled has gold in it. And there haven't been any holes that we've aimed at that fault that have, that have hit the fault that haven't had gold. They've all been mineralized. So that's really exceptional because it has this continuity and this sort of sense of scale. And the numbers that we put out yesterday, just to give you an idea for some of the highlight intercepts, we had 48.67 grams over 8.7 meters. So I guess in imperial terms, that's about 1.5 ounces gold over, or what would that work into, more than 20 feet. Right. And that's shallow mineralization compared to most of our peers. So these are they're really exceptional numbers, and we keep generating very good gold values as we go kilometer after kilometer after kilometer along this big LP fault structure.
You just recently announced also adding some 110,000 meters to your current drill program. That is pushing it up to 200,000 meters. I guess we'll take you through 2020. Could you tell our listeners what the objectives of that very aggressive drill program is now?
Well, you know, given the scale of the system that we're working on, and given that portions of the system where we don't have road access, although most of the project, the project's located right beside a paved highway. So nowhere are you more than a mile or 2 miles away from a paved highway and a power line and all that. So this is very easy to access. It's not up in the mountains. It's not up in the Arctic. It's just in Ontario, and it's easy to access. But given the scale of the size of the system that we're drilling, we needed to really make that drilling go more aggressively because portions of the project don't have logging road access. And that means that we have to drill them in the winter. So we are increasing the number of drill rigs and increasing the meters that we're drilling so that what we're aiming to deliver to the market in 2020 is a very good idea how big a portion of that system is, the mineralized system. And I think this sort of 4-kilometer type area that we've been working on so far would be a really good part of the project to, say, do initial resource definition on and then continue the expansion work concurrently, testing all these other targets that we have and testing the remaining portions of the LP fault out to as much as we can get. We think we'll probably drill off about 12 kilometers of it during 2020.
Wow. So in the meantime, I guess if you can do some infill drilling and start to get a resource calculation within that 4-kilometer area, the market can kind of start to see what you might have there. And then if you continue to step out successfully, then you can extrapolate potentially something much bigger even. I guess that's the intent, right?
Correct. I mean, right now, before we do resource definition, all we can point to is projects that are similar and have sort of similar size. And one that we've pointed to many times based on the style of gold mineralization is the Hemlo deposit in Canada. Mm-hmm. That produced over 23 million ounces of gold along about 3 kilometers of strike length, but similar disseminated high-grade gold to what we're seeing right now. But again, that's a 23 million ounce deposit, but over less of an area than what we've currently got. The other one that we point to frequently is the Malartic deposit, which is the biggest gold mine in Canada. I guess the open pit there is about 3.5 kilometers long, and it's got about a 12 million ounce. So it's quite a large bulk tonnage producer. So these are the sort of systems that are similar to what we've got here, in terms of the physical footprint at the Dixie property. And by doing fill-in drilling along a portion of that 18 kilometers, we'd be able to really show the market that minimally we have this X amount of gold. The thing is that because our target is so big, at 18 kilometers length, there are no zones. There are no contiguous gold zones known in Canada that are contiguous over an 18-kilometer length. So I don't yet know how big ours is going to be, but it's already butting heads with the biggest kind of deposits that we know about in the country. But what we need to do is the fill-in drilling to show exactly how many ounces and what grade and these other characteristics. But we know so far, with the information that we have, that it does look like a very significant discovery.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you your stock initially took off when you made these high grade discoveries at the Hinge and the Dixie Limb Zone, some of those more traditional Red Lake mineralization types. And then I think some investors are a little disappointed because you went over to the LP Zone. And the numbers weren't always nearly as sensational, perhaps, although you have had, as you just pointed out, some fingers of really high-grade gold as well. But maybe explain to our listeners why the LP is so much more important, that you focus most of your efforts there rather than the spectacular high traditional type of mineralization, high-grade mineralization at Red Lake.
Well, the typical zones in Red Lake, they tend to be high-grade and very narrow. On average, you're mining something that's a meter or 2 meters wide, sometimes 3 meters wide. So it'd be about the width of your typical dining room table or something like that. And the grades will be really good. You know, they'll be 6 grams to, say, 20 grams maybe on average over those kind of widths. So this is very much like what we're looking at with our original Dixie Limb and Hinge discoveries, high-grade gold and veins. But there is no individual zone in Red Lake that's more than a couple hundred meters long. Sometimes they're vertically extensive. You get lenses that are hundreds of meters, but they're not very big zones individually. So in a normal mine, you'd have maybe 10 zones of, say, 100,000 ounces each or 200,000 ounces each. So you'd be a million to a couple million ounces that you would mine out in these narrow sort of lenses. And that's very much like what we have at the Dixie Limb and Hinge, so conventional high-grade underground Red Lake mining. But the LP fault, the scale of it is staggeringly different. So you end up with very high-grade gold, like some of these numbers that we've put out. We've put out initially, you know, a couple meters of just about 200 grams per ton gold. You have many intervals that are 17, 18 meters of 10 to 12 grams per ton gold. So that's a third of an ounce to close to half an ounce. Wider intervals of very high-grade gold mineralization. But the continuity is what really makes it exceptional, because we're seeing, I was talking with our vice president of exploration last night over dinner while we were discussing some results, and some of the zones that we're looking at have continuity. Apparently, in the drilling that we've done so far on the drill fences, we see this, what we interpret so far as the same zones over nearly 400, 500 meters continuously.
Wow.
These are larger and wider and higher grade than what you would typically see in Red Lake, and that means when we drill the LP fault, we're getting more, effectively more gold mineralization per drill hole than you would on a normal Red Lake target. Not just a bit more, a lot more. So it's been very exciting for us, because that's extremely unusual. So to get that kind of big scale continuity of high grade mineralization and then these broad envelopes, sometimes we've seen up to 120 meters of over a gram per ton gold going right to surface. Those are the sort of broad lower grade envelopes around the high grade that the big companies in the world are looking for, because these make surface accessible bulk tonnage mining, which are really profit drivers for those corporations. So that's why we've been so interesting to so many people, even at this very early stage.
Yeah, it's early stage, but and you've done a remarkable job of being able to raise money efficiently, not, you know, with minimal dilution, which leads me to my another question. You want to, I mean, as a shareholder, I'm hoping that this is what you have in mind, to be able to define the limits of this mammoth deposit, it looks like, and to define the limits of it without giving the store away. That is, you've been able to raise money. I think you have something like $31 million thereabouts in the till right now. I guess that will take you through 2020, will it?
Yeah, all the way through 2020 and into 2021. We have, in addition to that, there is some warrants that are owned by largely management and one of our significant shareholders, which would bring in about another $10 million. So in the till right now, we have the equivalent of about $40 million. So we'll probably finish, the current drill program is budgeted at about $20 million. That'll be wrapped up by the end of 2020, but we'll still have roughly, even with the burn rates, all the administration fees and marketing and all that, probably somewhere on the neighborhood of about $15 million left in the bank account at the end of 2020, which lets us either do way more drilling inside of 2020 or just continue drilling through 2021. So we're in a very good financial position.
Yeah, well, I'm really hopeful that you can hang on from any would-be predators for as long as possible and keep stepping out and keep hitting. Of course, at some point in time, we know you're likely not to keep hitting. I mean, one of the most impressive things about your story and why I got in really early was because you were hitting consistently. And that was back there in the initial discovery with the hinge and the Dixie limb. And now LP zone seems to be the same story. So one more question before I let you go, Chris, having to do with your announcement, maybe several weeks ago, about a royalty spin out, a 2% royalty spin out you're talking about. And in your most recent press release, you talked about that you would be providing more detail on that. But apparently that is something your board is planning to move forward with. Could you talk to us a little bit about the philosophy behind forming a royalty spin out for existing shareholders?
Yeah, Jay, one of our primary concerns as management in Great Bear, just based on the strength and the size of what we've got, is that we think what we're drilling off is really a world-class asset, so a tier one asset from a big company point of view. And there are no tier one assets that aren't owned by big companies. It's all owned and operated by a handful of the biggest companies, all the assets that fit these criteria. So if we have one of those, we're going to be a target of consumption from one of them, because they're looking for safe jurisdiction, North American access, big scale, profitable projects. And if we continue to deliver like we have been, I think this is what we're very likely looking at. So that means that as management, you look at it and you're like, how do we benefit our shareholders as much as possible? And one of the ways to do that is to take a royalty, put it on the project that goes then directly out to be owned by our shareholders. Because out of all these big deposits in the world that sort of fit these kind of criteria like we're thinking, all of them have royalties on them. But we were really smart when we got involved in Dixie, and we bought out the royalties very early on before anybody knew, and we didn't even know how big the project was. So it took a royalty, brought it all the way down to zero, and by adding a 2% royalty, we're just kind of bringing it up from the basement back to ground level. But that benefit on that, the cash flow that could be generated, if it's as big as what we think it is, we think that royalty is going to be worth potentially as much as the entire company is right now to our shareholders again as a spin-out. And we'll announce details about that in January, but the potential cash value of a royalty, if the system is as big as what we think, is probably very similar to, or potentially very similar to, what the market capitalization of Great Bear is at the moment. So that's something we wanted our shareholders to benefit from, and it would make it completely in line with some of the biggest deposits in the world in terms of the royalty burdens that they have. Some of them have 5 or 7% royalties on them, and they're still highly profitable because of the size and scale. So we think that this is not an economic impediment to the project, but it's certainly an economic opportunity for Great Bear shareholders.
Well, that's very exciting. And I must say, personally, for me, it's one of the reasons I vowed not to sell any shares from this point forward, because I want to hang on to that longer term promise, because I, too, believe, based on what I've been following your story, that you have a monster on your hands. You're growing a very large deposit, and the economics, whilst there's still a lot of work to be done, look very, very positive at this early stage anyway. Chris, thank you so much for being with us, and I guess it would be constant news flow then, I guess, into the new year, right?
Yeah, it's even going to be a very busy January, so I would anticipate. So thanks for speaking with me again, Jay.
All right, thank you very much, Chris, for being with us.